You're listening to The Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
We're back. Wow, we want to thank Dr. Skip Alexander, man. Thank you so much for staying an hour. We're going to invite you back during this Black History. You know, man, it's Black History Month. Wow. We've done so much. We get a month, and she's done so much. It's 365 days a year. You know, one of our intellectuals, social scientists, I never forget reading about the fact that there are so many of our talented 10 now that are taken away from a lot of the social issues. So we don't have the social scientists we used to have and the academics and intellectuals who deal with the state of our culture and our community. But this is one who didn't leave the community, who uses her intellectual capital and her love for all people to make sure that we're working on things in our community. And that is Dr. Denise Shervington, President and CEO the Institute of Women and Ethnic Studies. Welcome to the Good Morning Show.
Thank you, Oliver. What a lovely introduction.
Well, it's really true. You know, I'd read Dr. West's book, done a bunch of research on, you know, one of the problems today is that so much of our talent is cream skimming. Mm-hmm. You know, it's capitalism, you know, through, you know, the ability to keep up. And there are very few who believe that they can make a living championing the rights of others. And not only have you done that, but you've committed your life to that. And, you know, that's not the model used today, Dr. Shervington. You know, so there's something about you which said that, no, my time and my intellect and my talent and my heart belong to my people.
Yeah, because I'm here because of those people who did that for me. I'm not here by my own talents. I'm here because people struggled, people gave their lives. And so for me, being back in New Orleans after Katrina means that we have to try to particularly save ourselves, but in focus on our children. They have been ignored. And I worry that because we have not paid attention to their needs, to some of the things that have gone wrong in their lives, bad things that have happened to them, we're beginning to lose them to the prisons.
And that's a powerful segue right into the topic, because so many now are giving their lives not because of their reality, because of others' perceptions.
Yes.
So it's like one size fits all. Talk to us a little bit about the negative perceptions around New Orleans youth, even if they're trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, well, we need to remember that many New Orleans youth 10 years ago, even those who weren't born then, but you know how we carry things, suffered an extreme trauma. They came face to face with death. And I didn't really get that until we started going in the schools. And I remember being in one class and we were trying to teach on stress.
Trying to teach.
And the kids wouldn't settle down. And I felt like, what are we going to do? You know, they're not hearing us. And so I stopped the class. It was Dr. Richardson and I. And I said, let's talk. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what happened to you guys. And it was incredible to hear the stories these kids told about what happened to them during Katrina. And they never told these stories. No one ever asked. No one seemed to think that it was important.
Go ahead, Dr. Jervis.
And I'm just saying that's the tip of the iceberg.
I have to stop you there because that is extremely powerful in how the negative perceptions have continued. New Orleans, black youth in New Orleans have always had a negative stereotype. Mm-hmm. No matter, I tell folk all the time, Angola has always had a lot of honor roll students. Mm-hmm. The best minds were always told to go work and clean up the rooms and work at the restaurants, fast food, or in the hotels. But post-Katrina, you were one of the few who had Governor Jindal and had FEMA, had leaders listen to you. We would have invested in the mental health of our young people the day after the storm passed.
Absolutely. We've seen this in other disasters. After 9/11, a lot of resources were put into helping to build back the psychological resilience of people. Because when bad things happen to us, we are going to become emotionally hyperactive. Because that's survival. Fear is to help us survive. There's something going on, and we need to pay attention. No such resources were put into helping our communities, and in particular our children, understand what happened to them, and so that they could learn how to cope and to function. So what we're seeing now, with the data that we have gathered based on our work mm-hmm. in going into the public schools here in New Orleans, is that they're showing rates of post-traumatic stress disorder that resembles veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. They're at that rate 2 to 3 times the normal that we see in the country. They're depressed. Mm-hmm. They're, when we screen them for depression, they're like 2 to 3 times the rate that you would expect. They've had a lot of exposure to violence. 51% of the over 1,300 kids that we have screened said that they've experienced someone close to them murdered. 18% of these kids said they have witnessed mm-hmm. the murder. Over 30% of our kids worry that no one loves them. We've got to pay attention and we've got to support them. And we have to help them make it through this level of trauma.
Well, let's talk about that. Those statistics are alarming. We see what's happening with juvenile crime, mm-hmm. juvenile drug use, what they call killer heroin, mm-hmm. is rampant in our community mm-hmm. right now amongst young people. The level of juvenile violence is off the charts, 11, 12, mm-hmm. 13-year-olds. Are people listening?
Well, we are. This is what our campaign is about, mm-hmm. in that number. Mm-hmm. We're saying that in this number of trauma in the community, these statistics that we've gathered, they're real people, real children in that make up this number. And we need to listen to them, and we need to validate that they are suffering from trauma, and then we need to support them. I'm not saying that our children are mentally ill. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that our children have faced a lot of trauma, mm-hmm. and they need the appropriate supports to be able to manage and cope and to get back to some degree of psychological normalcy.
But what about, it takes a whole village to raise a child, mm-hmm. Parental responsibility, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. I mean, those cliches don't work.
No.
No. Dr. Shrift is laughing at me.
No.
We're not going to slogan our way out of this.
No. We're going to, you know, one of my heroines in this community. I need to use that word carefully. Right. One of my heroes.
Sheroes.
Is the principal at Crocker, Dr. Aitken, Amanda Aitken.
Absolutely, yes.
I just think that she is to New Orleans children.
Our mediation team went to work with her, and she told us, do what you do, and we settled with Brother William Patrick X. She said, yes. I want y'all to deal with him because I want to keep him in school.
Exactly. And she says, you know, when a child acts out in her school, it's not about what's wrong with them. It's like mm-hmm. what happens. And she and her team actually put the energy into trying to figure out what's going on in this child's life. How can I help them?
We found out that one of the kids mm-hmm. had witnessed his 9-year-old sister get her brains blown out.
Yes. Yes. How do you expect that child to come to school and focus and learn? I had one kid that I saw in one of the high schools who had witnessed, during his time in a shelter, this man attempting to kill himself and came back to New Orleans. This is a 17-year-old kid, came back to New Orleans and at least has seen 3 of his friends killed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they asked me, the social worker asked me to see him, what can I do? And first of all, I was one of the few people who sat down and listened to his story and gave him the correct diagnosis. He was being diagnosed as schizophrenic. There was nothing schizophrenic about this kid. He had post-traumatic stress disorder, and he needed to talk about and understand and make sense of what had happened to him. And when he told me, he said, it doesn't make sense for me to sit in the class because I'm wasting my time and the teacher's time. Nothing is coming in. I'm worried about, right, am I going to make it today? Am I going to be alive this evening?
Well, put your headphones on. We have our callers, 504-260-9265. A very powerful discussion with Dr. Denise Servitan, President, CEO of IWES, Institute of Women and Ethnic Studies, about a campaign to create it to change the negative perceptions of New Orleans youth. Line 2, Brother Al Mims, you're on with Dr. Servitan.
You know, Oliver, I listened to what y'all saying, and it's true.
Yes.
It's showing up in our prison system and death rate and thing. You know what it is? Society still making our children pay by punishing them, not treating them. Mm-hmm. They don't get no consideration. They really don't. Mm-hmm. So my point is, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Because nobody's going to come save us. The first day of Black History Month, we got children don't even know about our black history. You have a great day. I'm going to listen.
Thank you. Reverend Alexander said the same thing about, you know, what are we going to do? He said, you know, it may be somebody else's fault. But there has to be, the collective mm-hmm. has to begin to take a look and do the work like Ms. Aiken, like Dr. Shervington, like others. Mm-hmm. That we have to start looking within our community for solutions, and you, I mean, you tell the world that you mm-hmm. challenge everybody you work with. Hey, look, we're not waiting for somebody to fix this for us.
Yeah, and I think what we have to do is figure out the piece we can do. We can't fix everybody, but we can do what we can do, mm-hmm. and it starts with understanding what's going on with our children. I'm mm-hmm. in particular about our children. We need to have empathy, we need to have love, we need to have compassion, and we need to demand that they be treated as children.
Dr. Sherman, I'm gonna make it personal, mm-hmm. and I'm gonna take it to where this is real talk. I don't mm-hmm. run away from my life.
Okay.
And part of Jarvis DeBerry is an article about sad children, not bad children. You know, everybody knows, you know, when I went on vacation, I went into this criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget the comments about New Orleans men, New Orleans young men. Mm-hmm. Was that no one wanted them. The people who ran the prisons mm-hmm. Were afraid of them.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like too many of them
mm-hmm.
Because they thought they were disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
Even within the penal system, there was a negative brand that was attached to young people who come out of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
That's sad.
That's very sad.
Especially after Katrina.
Yeah. We need to remember that. Similar to what happened in the country that I come from, Jamaica, that slavery as it happened was one of the most brutal.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the places of the most brutal experiences of slavery. And what that breaks us. So, and I'm not, you know, I know people out there are going to say, oh, here you go with slavery. Yes, there we go. That was a turning, a big
It did
mortar.
Happen.
It happened. And we are seeing that we have generations and generations of historical trauma mm-hmm. that we've not dealt with. And then in New Orleans, you add all of these, this toxic stress mm-hmm. that has existed here. One of the most severe forms of racist oppression exists, I think, in the city, has existed here. And Katrina kind of opened it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel that it's time for us. I think it's important to understand what happened to us, not to throw blame, but to be able to fix it. And so my role, I'm a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. What I can do is I can individually work with young people, but also really lobby us as mm-hmm. citizens to create policies that will help to give children the supports that they need. They need to be able to manage the traumas that they're facing.
Let's talk about that. You know, Greg Radler, head of Ceasefire,
mm-hmm.
and I used to have bi-weekly meetings uptown
mm-hmm.
with black men from every mm-hmm. part of the spectrum, from the community, elected officials. And one of the things we talked about was a positive campaign. Wouldn't it be nice if you saw billboards of people,
mm-hmm.
ex-offenders and who have changed their lives, who run their own business, black men in terms of not just on Crime Stoppers or NOLA for Life signs, but black
mm-hmm.
men on billboards
mm-hmm.
that were doing wonderful things to change the perception. You don't shy away from the power of perception. You know, in this article, we're treating sad kids as if they're bad kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different diagnosis.
Yes. And it starts with...
And different solutions for those.
Yes. We become more restorative.
Mm-hmm.
We create psychological supports. And we value our children as total, whole human beings. I just want to make reference to the recent situation of the young male at Tulane
mm-hmm.
who committed these criminal acts, and he's now getting mental health services rather than being really in the
They worked overtime to diagnose him out of the criminal element into the mental health.
This should happen for all our children. I'm happy it happened for him.
Right.
Let's let that happen for 100% of our children when we see them acting in bad to the extreme criminal ways.
We're going to go to Mr. Lawrence, but I'd love to use the comment that Percy Marshall and Cess 504 on the show Tracy Washington I did some time ago. We asked them what New Orleans meant to them. And basically Percy Marshall and Cess said, you know, in New Orleans, it was tough when we had, you know, resources for the park. streets paved, grants for business, housing. There was always a struggle for resources to help us with school and equipment and after tutoring and family programming. He said, but every time one of us got in trouble, there was never a question of it. They had enough money to hurt us and lock us up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We need to change that. Wow. We need to demand a change.
Line two, Mr. Lawrence, you're on with Dr. Denise Irvin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Doctor had mentioned earlier, because she came from Jamaica, that about Chattamauga slavery was very brutal. I just want to ask a question. Do you think that the African Americans, the Africans in America, is still evolving from Chattamauga slavery right now? Because we've only been out 150 years, and we have a lot of problems. Do you think that that's part of a lot of the problems we have, that we're still evolving from that, from Chattamauga slavery? I'm going to hang up and listen.
Thank you, Mr. Lawrence. Good question.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. I think that we have never created the systems and the rituals to fully deal with the horror that happened to us. And Fanon said that if we internalized the subjugation and the inferiority, that sense of inferiority that came mm-hmm. from how we were treated, that we were going to become our own worst enemies. And we can see a lot of the fear that we still carry around. I just happened to bring Ta-Nehisi's new book in here with me. And I just want to, I think everybody, especially every black man in America needs to be, every black man in the world needs to read it. But he's so much more a scholar than I. And
I don't know about that, but he's proficient in what he does.
Yes, he's excellent at what he does. And he talks about the fear of trying to protect his body as a black child, that he's carried this all his life. And so we need to understand. I also would invite anyone in the city who has not yet been to the Whitney Plantation to just take a ride.
Yes.
It's not that expensive. We can afford it. We spend a lot of money doing other things. Go see. Just get a little
John
taste.
John Cummings. Yes.
Yes,
absolutely.
Go get a little taste.
Wonderful
of
thing
it
John
was.
Cummings
yes,
has done.
Yes.
Use real life stories, and I think they're so appropriate. You deal with this every day. There was a young man that our brother Hakim Kashif and I were dealing with. We called in the council. If parents have trouble, we get calls from with Brother Willie, Beef Mediation. Brother Hakim and I were talking to this young man who was 15 years old. His mother brought him. We're trying to keep him out of prison, keep him alive, and them not get put out of their housing. When we finally put the mom out of the room, because he wouldn't open up with her there, and we asked him what he wanted, this young man who's involved in violent assaults, who's on his way to prison or the graveyard, when Brother Hakim stood up and he said, "Hey, man, what do you want?" He got in his face and said, "What do you want?" He put his head down and he says, "I want my daddy." The father doesn't want to deal with him because the mother doesn't want to have sex with the father anymore, and because the mother doesn't want to be affectionately tied to his dad, so the dad stays away from the family. This is a sad child.
Not bad.
And that's all he said. He didn't say he wanted money. He said all he said was he wanted his daddy.
And this is what, Oliver, over the years, I have done a lot of psychotherapy with African-American males. And this is what oftentimes it comes down to, that we're all seeking what all humans want, to be loved, to be nurtured, to be cared for. And we're going to have to get more tender and soft with ourselves. We're going to have to recognize that we're all seeking connection and love. And if we began to, I think I'm going to paraphrase a little bit of what Ta-Nehisi said, but he feels that we shouldn't have children till we're over 21, and we shouldn't have them till he uses married. But I think that we need to be set up as circumstances when we decide to have children to recognize that we're going to have to love and care for them beyond even our own needs.
I talked about this before, and I'm really candid about a lot of our conversations. I'll never forget the panel discussion about parental responsibility and having children when you can take care of them. And I'll never forget, many times when you challenge young women, Well, I love my baby. You can't tell me nothing about my baby. And a lot of times, panelists will be quiet, and they won't take that on. But this one discussion we had once, and I think it was at UNO Arena, where one panelist said, you said you love your baby, right? Yeah. What would have been wrong with bringing your baby into this world with a man, who, a young man who was responsible? What would have been wrong with bringing your baby into this world when you were able to take care of that baby? So I understand we love your baby too, but don't try to make right out of a situation that could have been better if we were more thoughtful.
Yeah, and you know, I am not putting any blame out there on young women who find themselves in these circumstances. Because oftentimes there is some history there. There are things that have happened.
Right.
And so I feel as a society, we need to be able to then give that young person the kind of supports that they need, so that they can be able to understand.
So that the cycle can be broken.
Yes, and that their primary responsibility is loving and attaching to have their child feel secure in the world. And if in the first 3 years of a child's life, we can let them feel as if they are the cream of the crop, they are the most important thing that exists, then we've done our job.
Wow. Line two, Brian, man. Peace to you, good brother. Bless you. You're on with Dr. Servington.
Come on. I'm going to just make it fast. We all know, like, across America, especially in New Orleans, I don't know why, like, all the killers and the people who have these heinous crimes and murders and kill babies and all this type of stuff, the young men, they're the most adored people. The sociopaths are the most adored people amongst young people in our community.
Yes.
That makes... And all the prettier girls want to date these guys and all that type of stuff. So this is a mental state that I don't think is correct. So how would you guys address that?
But Brian, great question. I've heard young girls say, "No, I mean, my baby daddy a killer, or my baby daddy killed." I mean, bragging about it instead of reporting him, bragging about it.
I think on the surface it seems terrible.
Yeah.
And we can be horrified, but if we go a little deeper into this young person's, this young girl's life, and ask, why is she doing this?
Right.
What's gone wrong in her life? What happened to her that she would seek to have this person as a hero in her life?
Right.
And also, as someone, I have worked with those men, black men, who are killers. Mm-hmm. And we need to recognize that along the way, so many things went wrong in their lives. And so,
can I ask a question, man?
Absolutely.
Like the entertainment and industry and all this type of stuff, they kind of hold these type of people up on a pedestal also.
Great
and
point.
I know the people that fund the entertainment industry are the same people that fund all these non-profit organizations. Mm-hmm. So we should address them occasionally when these problems occur.
Thank you, Brian. That was a great session. Yuri Kane, the young man who shot and raped the couple, raped the man and the woman, held up with his 17-year-old girlfriend at her house. How just much more dysfunctional can that situation be?
And I think, you know, if we're going to prevent these situations from happening, we have to support and love our children during those critical points in their lives.
Dr. Servington, you help me. You're helping me. I have kind of flipped the script. I come up from a tough on time crime, tough love situation. I saw it with my father, brother. But I don't think there's a such thing as tough love anymore. I don't think we can tough our way. I think the answer is to love our young people now.
Yeah, we have to soften. We have to open up our hearts to our children. We need to recognize that children are looking to us to help guide the way. That if we give them enough love, if we give them direction, and if we make them feel safe, that they will, for the most part, make the right choices.
How can people get in touch and be part of this movement with iOS and Change Your Perceptions? Because market forces, advertising, propaganda matters. This is one of the most important initiatives facing our community right now. How can people help?
Well, we're asking people to kind of get in that number. We're going to have billboards up throughout the city that shares little pieces of the stories of the young people that we have worked with, that we have interviewed for this campaign. We will have a website that they can come to. We have a, I'm not into social media, but we're all over Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm going to get my communications person to give us all of that. But they're going to be seeing these billboards. They should be seeing some of it on the buses, that we're saying that our children are sad, not bad. And let's go and ask for and, you know, advocate for the appropriate kinds of approaches. We do not need our schools to become prisons.
I have to ask you this question before you go, and I can't have someone at your level and not ask this question. New Orleans, 52% unemployment black men. 14 mm-hmm. to 52% have done it right. They can pass mm-hmm. the drug test there. Some of the highest poverty levels for mm-hmm. black women. Mm-hmm. Disparity gap worse in the last mm-hmm. 6 years. Mm-hmm. Black poverty, mm-hmm. gentrification. Mm-hmm. Black women struggle more in this town per capita than mm-hmm. about any other place in America. But we still talk about New Orleans moving forward. Does it matter? I said this in a talk the other mm-hmm. day around Black Lives Matter, that I don't think it really matters whether our community does well or not, whether our community or America does well or not. Does it matter?
I think if we take it down to why are we here, what's the purpose of our life? Why are we struggling every day to live as human beings? Then I think it does matter. I think we all want what we all love, what we all want. We want to be loved. We want to feel valued. We want to feel that in the communities that we live, we have some agency, that we are a full part of our society. And I think to that extent, it does matter. And how much more beautiful it would be if we had a more peaceable and equitable society.
I don't need to say anything else, but thank you all for tuning in. Please support this. So how do we change the perceptions of our young people? Dr. Denise Shervington and I, Wes, we promise to come back?
Anytime. Thank you.
This is OT, the early bird, entire WBOK listening audience. Brian, Mr. Lawrence, everyone, guys, powerful questions, very thoughtful, thought-provoking. Now let's see what we do about it, guys. Stay tuned for The Good Life with Eileen Carter.